I think that's a bottom. Right, I know, that's another problem.
And our thing would be really wait for an application to set up. I mean.
It's very much so, I think, so like whatever, but.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello?
Thank you.
4:46 on Thursday, October 25th. John, you can add to the call of the roll. Joseph Anderson?
Here.
Dale Barbera?
Here.
Rune Dickham?
Here.
Omar Dean? John Dominguez?
Here.
Osai Agarapa? Abigail Hailu?
Here.
Shraddha Harshmanam?
Here.
Talia Menendez?
Oh, yes.
Catherine Wong? Kishrita Iranati?
Here.
Kansha Chen? Penny Kevin? Savannah Lin?
Here.
Nikki Kotoka?
Here.
Umran Mustafa? Deborah Kairo?
Here.
Grace Park? Indigo Padmoff? Marco Corazza Ochoa? Evan Shapiro? Akuza Shomek? Jaywon Sin? Michael Stefanko? Franco Uribe Weibel? Ian Wallace? Ryan
Weintraub?
Valentin Ishii?
With 23 members present, I would look favorably upon tabling the approval of the minutes until next week, since it's not passed as part of the agenda online. Is there any dissent? Awesome. Approval of the minutes has been tabled. Before we go into open microphone, I would like to motion to amend the agenda for a quick addition to the agenda that has any off the list now.
Here.
Okay. It's not the list, so motion to amend the agenda. All those in favor of including there's been a motion to add this resolution that has been given to everyone to the agenda. You can look over the resolution. This is resolution 15. Should we accept it now? All those in favor of adding this to the agenda. All those opposed. All those abstaining. This resolution will be approved. The addition of this resolution to the agenda clearly passes. We'll be moving it up to my
if you choose, you want to say anything, you need to do that. Yeah, that's you. Okay, bye bye.
Dale, that's what's your post.
Hi, everybody. So there's a PowerPoint attached to the speaker if you want to take a look at that. Today I'm going to be talking about the election, the general election. Number six, and what we as representatives can be doing to ensure a high voter turnout. This is in this set forth by the Voter Coalition. It's a coalition on campus that's like combining every single local organization in order to set forth the initiative of increasing voter turnout on campus. The logo is designed by Savannah Lynn, so that's the guy. All right, so you're registered. Anyone, it's the next slide. You're registered. Now what? I will send this link in the Slack, but it's basically just a link of the deadlines for absentee ballot, both receiving it and postage. And just like for every individual state, you can just see like if you're from like, California or from JT, you can have a postal card. So if you're in state on November 6th, we are currently working with COE, which is a for education, and they're offering six vehicles to shuttle kids around. For anyone who's unaware, our voting poll locations are like all over Ithaca for North Campus. People have to get all the way down to the high school, which is like a whole mile and a half. And so we're creating this shuttle service. There's a schedule we're going to be coming out for that soon, and I'll share that with everybody when that happens. But if you're interested in volunteering for this or being a driver for one of the vehicles, please reach out to me. I'm referring to agenda Oliver. Organizing all this. But the main concern is that for being such an active campus, we only had a 33% turnout for the 2016 election, whereas like, the national campus average is like 38%. And I know we had a ball that was in this or Boston's campus, so let's do our own part to make sure people actually turn out to vote. So I'd like to set forth an initiative that every individual on this organization. When you get your absentee ballot or if you're going to the polls, take a picture and share it on both your social media, any other organization's social media that you're a part of, and send it to Twitter, Facebook, Savannah, and she can also send the SA social media. And there's some like cool hashtags, like every vote counts is pretty good, see what elections is pretty good. That you just get crazy where you said, like, yes, you're registered, but it makes you actually be a part of it. For individuals who aren't registered or are unable to vote, I would decide to simply like read and share other posts and just like make sure that like any of your positions or any of your friends like are aware of like they should. Okay. They have the right to make sure that they're So I think this is something really important. I think we are representatives of this campus, and I think people's rights of votes is something that we should be supporting. So.
I'm going to get back to this now. That, I just wanted to say, are there people who want to talk about that? Okay, and that, I just wanted to say to those of you who are registered at Ithaca, your vote doesn't mean much. The political report is just in the 23rd district, you say Republicans like the Republican. So, regardless of which party you're voting for, your vote may matter. So, find your polling place if you're registered at Ithaca. It's probably about 3 miles long because college students should definitely vote. Moving on to the Appropriations Committee reports, I'm going to go through each of the organizations and tell you what we voted. We changed the vote up slightly because the charter is weird, essentially what we're doing with the committee. For every bylaw organization, we have to meet with them this semester. We then have to vote on, basically hypothetically, if this were a bylaw year, do we believe this organization to get an increase in funding, a maintenance of funding, a decrease in funding, or members would like to abstain. In the future, if there was ever a non-majority vote on the first round, I would do a runoff to the top two categories. That has not happened. For the organizations that we met with Cornell Concert Commission this week. We did not meet with the other organizations we respect with this week. We had a serious special conference request by a vote of 4-10-0. The committee voted that Cornell Concert Commission should maintain the same level of funding. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, last week, after February, I suppose, we met with Slope Media, PPR, Outer, RCMC, UMS. We voted for maintenance's funding on CUDMS, Slope Media, and Outer Odyssey, and all these organizations received a vote on maintenance. Again, this is entirely advisory. This is not affect next year's bylaw funding applications. If anybody has any questions, I'll probably write them. Short reports with about one paragraph each, just explaining why the decision was made, what those organizations are doing, and still what we should change for next year. Again, this is not forced to do anything next year, it's just it's a recommendation and it keeps everybody in the process of their there. In terms of special projects funding, the committee met with Red Magazine on Monday. I voted not to give Red Magazine funding. If you have any questions on that, discussions. It sounds like they did receive funding this week from other sources, so that's fantastic. The committee did not vote to not fund the organization because they didn't earn funding, but because of reasons for why they requested funding from us. The committee also voted to give $1,200 to the New Deal FC Club Soccer Team. That organization had been defined from the earlier semester by SAFC. Because, again, this is the reason we regret, we can't fund organizations solely because they were not SAFC funding, otherwise we would have every organization that did not receive SAFC funding. The committee, though, did meet with them now because they have made nationals for the first time, and they are short a lot of money. Giving them $1,200 would decrease the trip cost by about $50 per student, and this is now before the assembly. This is my verbal report on behalf of the committee that we are voted to give $1,200. The assembly right now is the power to overturn that decision, and I'm open to questions on any of the offered bylaw reports or the special projects.
Do we have any questions? We'll be moving into resolution 15. Hi everyone, so so as many of you know, over the weekend the Trump administration, the New York Times reported So over the weekend, on Sunday, the New York Times reported on a memo from Health and Human Services, from the Trump administration's Health and Human Services, about a proposed change to Title IX that would constrain the legal definition of sex and gender under Title IX. Basically, what they would do would take sex and make it defined by basically the genitalia on birth, effectively removing the idea of gender identity and gender expression as several recognized and protected classes under law. This would effectively erase a large chunk of the LGBTQ identity, specifically trans and gender non-conforming individuals. And that's something that has been a really big issue that has been kind of just sparked throughout the whole entire country, especially campus. I can say, like, as being president, like, this has been like a very difficult time because it's been extremely sensitive for a lot of folks. It's been extremely hard to understand what these potential timeline changes would do, when these timeline changes would happen, and what would happen to individuals currently receiving, you know, a variety of support services throughout our campus and a variety of support services outside of our campus when we're not in session. And so this resolution really seeks to push forward a really committed stance by Cornell University to the transgender and non-conforming community, whether it be students, employees, or faculty members. In addition, it asks that the Title IX Office of Cornell issue more specific guidance around what this might mean for individuals at the university who identify as transgender and non-conforming, so that there's more education around that, there's more understanding around what this might happen. And lastly, it asked Cornell University stipulations to start lobbying Albany New York to pass Agenda, which is a proposed act right now in the New York State Legislature. It passed the New York State Assembly 7 different times, while the Republican held the majority of the state Senate has refused to take enough even one single vote on it. And I think that's completely ridiculous because Agenda would essentially provide state protections for trans and gender non-conforming individuals and would provide them the safety that the Trump administration is attempting to revoke away from them. Fun fact for those who don't know, Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan of the New York State Senate sits ex officio to the Board of Trustees of Cornell University, along with Andrew Cuomo and State Assembly Speaker Carl. I forget his last name, sorry, Carl. But this is actual tangible steps that Cornell University can be taken to support the trans and gender non-conforming community at Cornell. For those who want to continue supporting, today there was with Land the Law, an event in the law school to talk about what this all means and try to think of public comment to, because all rule changes at the federal level have to go through a public comment period, so they're going to be, we did that event today. They're going to be replicating that event next Wednesday, this coming Wednesday at 5 p.m. in a location to be announced. I would also highly recommend donating any money if you have financial needs to trans-like organizations, what specifically Land of Law, the Sylvia Rivera Law Project, because this is literally one of the biggest things that's going to happen to the trans community at Cornell. I'm happy to take any questions on the resolution. I'm happy to answer more questions as best as I can, or provide resources for y'all to spread to your constituent groups and really get more involved in this conversation.
Is there any dissent to voting?
First of all, I don't want anyone to think that that's what I'm saying. I spent 6 years in the Army, and watching people who have their sexual origin of rest was heartbreaking. And it's important. On that note, I am just curious about some of the wording in the round.
So it hasn't, but it's like one of those proposed things that, like, when you get out in front of it, there is the change. Okay.
All those in favor of voting business of the day? All those opposed? All those abstaining? It's not business of the day. Come on, did you get that? We are now in the discussion. All those in favor? All those opposed? All those abstaining? Amendment passes.
Good job, this is really awesome. We came on another organization that's really awesome to donate to the Martha P. Johnson Institute. It's a trans women of color organization that does a lot of work, particularly with issues of like repression and like policy and government. Just a quick plug, but I think you would be, especially for people who identify with the gender that they're born in, is a really good way to use your privilege.
I'm talking about resolutions on the floor. If you could touch on how these changes and rules would directly affect our Title IX office on campus.
Yeah, I'll let you get after. So they're still trying to figure that out right now. So in addition with Title IX, how it is used for reporting sexual harassment and sexual assault on campus, Title IX has also been able to extend protections to trans individuals in specific regards to locker and bathroom usage on campus. And so that's a really key component of, in addition to the rest of Title IX, that really affects the transgender non-conforming community. So how this would work, we're still not completely sure. The Title IX office has been in direct contact with the LGBT Resource Center to start, you know, thinking through what guidance would look like on this. And that's part of the resolution to continue to follow through. But if the change does go through, this could mean that essentially transgender non-conforming individuals might not have the ability to go through the Title IX office for sexual assault and sexual harassment because the definition would be limited to sex. So they could only say if it was like a trans woman, new definition on sex won't be based on genitalia. And depending where they are in the process, there's a whole litany of differences that could happen. In addition to those who also don't know, the Department of Education is also considering changes to Title IX in regards to sexual assault and sexual harassment on campus, and so that's a whole other avenue. So if you want to think of the most complex law in America today, complex statute, it's Title IX that literally they're just trying to rip apart, but that's personal opinion.
Also, just as like a quick background, if everybody knows, Title IX, I know we associate a lot on campus, especially with like sexual assault reporting, but like Title IX is just, you can't discriminate on the basis of sex or gender or anything of that nature. So that's why Title IX is so important, and that's why changing the definition would basically take away the rights of men and people on campus. And then as another club, Title IX coordinator will either be coming next week or the week after that, depends if she can come next. But she'll definitely be here to answer questions, because I know the office.
Related to the resolution, but more towards your position as student president. If you just have any advice of the staff members in like helping them deal with these issues or presenting to you, they would benefit from.
Yeah, so sharing a lot of the resources that we're putting out, we put out like a pretty basic one for our Facebook page, so if you're connected with any organizations, please be sharing that out on your own personal organizational Facebook pages. We are looking at potentially getting speaker to campus. We're not sure who yet, but we're really trying on getting that just so that there's a degree of empowerment, degree of understanding, degree of allyship to start building more education and awareness around transgender non-conforming issues. So if you have large organizations that would be really will help getting co-sponsor, that's really great because then that allows us as the organization to save our money to continue supporting transgender non-conforming individuals throughout the whole entire year, but also just really helping us out overall. And then one of the other ideas that I'm trying to push and trying to get connections with is with state relations to kind of get two buses or a couple buses of Cornell students up over to Albany to start lobbying themselves for gender. So that's a forthcoming project. That's kind of like just my personal one, but also going to be even so. That's a project. We're really going to be looking for a lot of different funding sources. And I really appreciate the openness that I have gotten from other campus leaders, just sending emails, sending messages, asking what they could do to help in that proactivity from organizations that, quite frankly, I did not even think this would cross their mind. So I would give a shout out to a lot of fantastic organizations who are outside our traditional scope of a lot of organizations that co-sponsored with us, because that really means a lot to me.
Thank you. some of the specific protections that come out of this issue change to be going out. This might be a difficult question to ask, but you know how
yeah, so that number is confidential for reasons that Haven has. Our self-organization under Haven and there's other organizations that are trans and gender non-conforming led at now, those are confidential listservs to maintain the security and privacy of those members. So I can't give you a number on that, unfortunately. A lot of the kind of what Cornell provides is very wide ranging. Cornell Health is probably a leading health organization in Central New York for trans health. If you ask anyone at Planned Parenthood, they'll say Cornell Health is on the board with that. We can provide chest binders, hormone therapy, basically, really walking through the whole entire transition process up to any surgery. But once surgeries are back, then you go offsite to different locations, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Sarah. So we're not helping them do that a lot. There are recommended gender identification changes, name changes, but still those need some sort of state or federal identification first before you change that at Cornell, which is something that we've been looking on to move, because I think that is really important. I think college actually has ID for gender change, which is something I'm looking on to and I can do right now. Do that, but I can say from a healthcare perspective, really progressive, but there's still a lot of other perspectives when it comes to like classroom epidemics that there's still a lot to work on.
Any other questions? Then in the second building, all those in favor of resolution 15. All those against? All those abstaining? I'm going to be going to get rid of this as well. I vote 23-0 as a matter of responsibility. We're going to be going to review this on this if you guys have updates.
Okay, we have come from the UA. Undergrad reps to the UA are available.
So, what kind of UA are you doing? For those of you who know, that Dale and I hold on the UA. I serve as the executive vice chair of the UA, so I'm in the same capacity. Matt is the graduate student. UA, Dale's the presidential committee chair. So undergrads are very well with UA this year. Not undergrad, but that's okay. He wasn't undergrad. So UA has really just been up to housekeeping. So we passed an MS resolution this year looking at PHRP appointment versus training the board appointment to make sure those are fully staffed and fully functioning. In addition, the main, I think the biggest really UA presidential committee was as we see its report from the Casey Working Group of Massman, the Working Group, it has a name, but basically it's a bunch of recommendations that were in response to all the incidents last year in the fall semester. So looking at a various set of changes, looking at changes to the definition of harassment, and they're going to do that, you know, it's more. Oh, yeah, they are, okay. If you have questions, Dale and I know are willing to learn more about the campus code of conduct, but Dale and I know, but it's also on the CDC.
So I feel like Cuddy was going to fall off next.
Yeah.
very slow process. So I think 2 weeks ago we got the report back and the working information. It was a pretty long document, but there's a lot of things that people send like a lot into it.
So I'll take a question about University Assembly is voted usually working with the but first the general assembly really for everyone understand the oldest standing committee of the University Assembly has undergraduates and undergraduates back to the employees because they're all committees of the University Assembly. And its primary responsibility is oversee the final, which is a bizarre document that has been intended to perform for years. I'm sure that's something wrong that we're reflecting, but the document has all the information for violations that violations of the campus code. That's the code of it. It also has all the rules and procedures for proxy, how to do this, what the staff and competition is, what they're asking to do with the cases. It's a lot of stuff. The campus code of conduct right now is difficult. Not clear what the rules and rights are. It's not clear what the values are. It's set at 100 securities, not 42, 55. It's too long, and it's a lot of rules. And so, in response to the events last year, I think initially we did the documents that we want to call on the campus. There were the action in this case of the University Assembly as well. I think this is part of the looking into the document that the text is essentially what the committee decided qualifies assault. So in terms of that specifically, the committee has given us recommended language that added wholesale to the campus code of conduct without other changes. And it's not exactly still clear that language is not being in and also what does it actually say. But they want us to add that as essentially term their report that we would violate the campus code of conduct to harass that person by acting for that person. Now the unlawful is viewers. It interferes with the needs of the five times and groups to participate in all that education on the program's activities. Now that's just a matter of interaction, but as a further subject, specifically the five times also a violation to engage in discriminatory hostile environment and ask for people because of their actual engagement, specificity, color, disability, gender identity, expression, unimpressive. That is a marital status, national race, religious practice, sexual orientation, economic status, veteran status, and race. Hostile environment is created by conduct or racial practices that is unwelcome and severe resistance. Unreasonably interferes with the cause of the participating in the university of racial resistance. The language in that form or similar form, that can come from the second year by opposing to University Assembly will go to the full University Assembly and then go to the President Evil, which is the person also. But there are a lot of other members of the faculty on the call, which is in the past.
You can find the report on the Office of the Assembly's website under the University Assembly to peruse such a own matrix. So you have to keep up with fail.
Okay, it's a good thing to see that we not here, and also like just like for your community and so next up is the next up is the income CIC.
CIC is not convenient.
Thank you. We have Bronco for campus planning. Next is transportation here and the review board for Savannah.
So, they have a map? She says they have a map.
Do you want to run this paper?
Next is Ian again for GPSA.
Ian, GPSA.
So, GPSA has not passed any resolutions. But they're pretty cool group that they're working on. They're working on engaging the general body because, in addition to the voting reps, they also have 30 plus field reps, and they're working on engaging them.
Mr. Pataglia would like to make a little comment. I can't hear you.
Okay, it's better. So I'm an ex-Christian member of the GPSA. So we actually did pass on the roof. It was our internal budget, so who's internal housekeeping. But in general, the assembly has been looking at the lectures at many times. Graduate professional community is new, deepest sky, it's a buy-in for 25 years. That's been a very significant undertaking. That's a great process. It's also, the GPSA is also, the assembly grew by about 9 seats this year because it added these professional students, law, vet, and the Johnson Graduate School of Management. And this takes our total voting numbers to around 27, 28, and we also have about 100 fielders for the large group. But we're excited for the budget, we're really focusing on GPCI and general housing.
Yeah, just to go off that too, resolutions. Measure success by a value. So you can be a good representative and that passes. Putting that out there.
And I just sent out the list that I'm using. It was on Slack if you want to get over. And next is Natalia for the EA.
EA has had a lot of restructuring. They basically got rid of all the committees and like made all new committees. They haven't passed a lot of things, but they did have their like employee recognition thing recently. But well, that's pretty much it for me. Not anything super important to us.
I'm also currently in discussion about having employees serve on some responsibilities.
Okay, and also please don't ask for access. I made a mistake. I'm going to send this to you. And next is we're moving on to faculty senate, and we have 4 more days for the Johnson to be on faculty and faculty senate. Faculty senate committee next week. Okay, next is John Dominguez for faculty senate.
No, no, okay, here's what the faculty senate is doing. So the faculty senate is. Dragon is looking at a variety of problems, but the biggest problem that they're looking at this year is the role of postdocs at the universities, so postdoctoral employees or faculty members, if they fall within the structure of the faculty senate or they fall within the structure of the employee assembly. They have a couple of recommendations, I think, that are going to be loaded into the faculty senate. We're not too terribly sure yet, so yeah.
They also are looking at the faculty security discussion meeting. Which is interesting because that is something that we've discussed for many years, and there are a lot of institutions that we discuss. So, if you're interested, food insecurity. And they're also looking at, because it moves already.
Oh, no, they've been down there for years.
And once so far, that's not shown up, please.
Next, we have John Dominguez for Faculty Senate Academic Freedom and Professional Status of the Faculty Committee.
Yes, we would get that. I got contacted you, but obviously, this is like a thing like I'm not like people who are cool to you, but yeah, we would get
that. Next, we have Debbie for Faculty Senate Academic Program.
You should be on this week because I think I checked some patent and also there was like you just have another check on our videos. Next we have 7 for education policy committee and also our faculty advisory committee on this level of principal.
That second one has a negative education policy committee. They're looking at obviously which they use scheduling stuff, but haven't done no updates in the last times of classes and things like that.
Okay, we have a follow-up for University of Massachusetts report. Okay, next is follow-up for student library budget. Some of these committees will be ones that have a question, others will be a need. Okay, next we're moving on to Provost and Provost Committee. This is really for the Johnson Provost.
I thought most of these.
Online education advanced and technology company, what was that?
I gave an update last week. I've contacted them again today. We'll be sending
them. John. How do you tonight?
We haven't met yet, but actually, as of today, we just sent our meeting date for the members to be a part of that CB. So, anyone else wants to share?
Just checking out if you touch about this, because I know you're just saying this. And next is Joe and Guru for Student Health and Benefit Planning.
Yeah, so this committee is not enough. For those who don't know what the Student Health Benefits Advisory Committee does, it basically sets the benefits for the student health plan and the health fee and what the costs are, what services you'd be covered under, So at the beginning of the semester, we looked at the necessary coverages for outside health insurances. So remember, like over the summer and stuff, like 2,000 students, like got denied for the first time, and you're like, oh my god, why do I have to share? Like, I thought it was going to be healthy. So we looked at that. We had a pretty in-depth discussion with it. Honestly, nothing has changed because of how basically the medical field is structured out in Ithaca, where basically how your medical center is the option to go to. So it was really difficult to change that. So basically, the schools would stay the same, but we have made strides to ensure that if you do get denied the health fee and your waiver does get denied, you're actually going to go into a more comprehensive educational process with Cornell Health so that they can make sure that if your health insurance probably is not that great or you really don't know the options on your health insurance and stuff like that, they will find ways to understand that with you. So they can do that. And then we've been moving into greater discussions on what the health fee and the student health plan benefits will look like.
So right now, we're going to make some and the other option is 7% this year with a 6% increase and 5%. But the issue with the 7% increase is that that's projected to come health, and then we offset by the options. All this increase in group based is that we pay $7. So for most services, with the 7% plan, this would be changed to 15%. You can see the 50%. Another option is removing Saturday hours. So right now, we don't have Sunday hours. If we want on the 7% deal, we would also have Saturday hours. Outside of this, Nick and I are currently developing this with our students to understand. This survey will go out to the entire student body. Survey essentially the context of the health fee right now, different whether it's going to go to 10% or 7%, and then on top of that, different views that students have moving forward. So, one for instance, having more campus satellite to be $25 a student, or we have transportation to Cornell Health from anywhere on campus, $10. Or we could have various mental health resources that are online, maybe $10. And all this can be outlined in the survey. So we're essentially what we're requesting go to referendum, bureaucracy, the logistics, what a referendum is, we can't get a referendum. But what I've proposed at this point is putting the survey out there in partnership with Cornell Health and then having the students vote on this on November. So it was just the enforcement of the coverage they've always had. So what was happening before was essentially they're like, oh, they weren't catching something. Weren't going through like the same process. And so this past cycle was the first cycle they really actually started to set.
Okay.
Yeah, a few questions. The no Saturday hours option, do the pharmacies give you open on Saturdays?
Absolutely not.
Okay. And then the 10% increase option, that's just about right, that's 10% for the city next year.
So the view of the is projected revenues at 10%, that's for that one that you mentioned. The other option is the 10% for a certain cost.
And well, I guess so that would be about this one. Okay, and then is it 10% every year? Yeah, it's only one time.
Is it 10% off? 10%
off? 7% is it 7%? Okay. And then is there any discussion about, because obviously it is helpful to continue to block and advise, and there are, I would imagine, a large number of students, maybe not. They don't want to kind of have much of anything at all. And now that this health is coming to us, is there any discussion at all about the health fee who will be increased such a use for all?
So that hasn't been a discussion, but it is mandated by Cornell that every Cornell student has insurance, and even if you do have that private insurance, you must be paying the health fee. That's just how the how it is, but it's not in the discussion we talked about. It's certainly something that we can bring, but I really don't think that's a possibility to come up.
Thank you. Also, you go off that, when you do pay the health fee, you have access to benefits. So I recommend to you, it's all good friends.
I just want to say, nobody thinks that we put our own hands.
Okay, that is it. So, if you don't have any questions about it, like in general. Okay, I guess hopefully, I guess I will go to the next one. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Motion to adjourn.